Welcome to the July 2025 News Bulletin podcast for commercial shipping marine surveyors, put together by the International Institute of Marine Surveying. We open our podcast with an introduction from IIMS CEO Mike Schwartz. Dear colleague and fellow marine professionals, it is not so often I find myself being able to share just good and uplifting news exclusively with you. So, whilst disasters at sea continue unabated, sadly this month has been no exception. For this news bulletin, at least, my focus is firmly elsewhere. Although rather dry affairs as a rule, annual general meetings are an essential ingredient in any institute or club's yearly agenda. With that firmly in mind, the IIMS 2025 AGM took place on Tuesday 3rd of June and was broadcast online from the institute's head office. Dozens of members joined via Zoom to participate in the meeting. I was genuinely touched by some of the positive feedback I received from many of those from all over the world who attended. My colleagues and I worked tirelessly behind the scenes on behalf of our members and for the greater good of the industry, so when others choose to acknowledge that, we do appreciate it. One of the most pleasurable parts of the AGM is announcing some high-profile awards. Recognizing individuals who have contributed something exceptional to the organization and the marine sector in general is of key importance. You can read more about those individuals who were honored along with some photos elsewhere in this bulletin. Our president, Captain Ruchin Dale, elected to support the Sailors' Society as his chosen charity whilst in office. As part of this connection, I was invited to meet with the local Sailors' Society chaplain, Fran Sahetapi, who is based at Southampton Docks. It was a privilege to join him recently on a couple of ship visits to observe him at work and to understand what is involved. I have to say that it came as a surprise to me to see how he and the charity operate and the range of support services they can offer. We boarded a giant car carrier, K-Line's Orion Highway, in the process of being loaded with thousands of cars, in itself fascinating, and were warmly welcomed and treated with respect right from the off by the crew. Fran spoke and engaged with the crew in the mess room, and the ship's captain came by and spent a good 20 minutes earnestly chatting with us. As I have said before, if you are not involved in this industry, you have little idea of what really goes on behind the scenes. There is no doubt that the life of a seafarer is challenging, but I got the distinct feeling that the Orion Highway's crew were happy in their work. I am now putting the final touches for my Australasia visit and depart on the 7th of July bound for New Zealand. There is still time to book your place for the Auckland event on the 11th of July or the two-day Brisbane seminar on the 17th and 18th. We have some excellent speakers and presenters covering the widest range of marine surveying topics imaginable at both events. And if you can't get to the venues in person, please consider joining as an online-only delegate. Canada Conference new date announced. I also want to inform you that the IIMS Canada Branch 2025 conference, which was postponed earlier this year, has been rescheduled for the 22nd and the 23rd of October and will take place at Hamilton, Ontario. My thanks to the local branch committee, whose members have lined up an impressive array of speakers. I look forward to being present at the event. Also worthy of mention is the four-day IIMS Practical Surveying Course, backed by popular demand, the third iteration of which is planned for December 2025, to be held at the Boat Building Academy in Lyme Regis, UK. This is an opportunity to be under the guidance and tutelage of three highly experienced, senior marine surveyors as you work alongside them inspecting and surveying three vessels over 3 days. On day four, it is into the classroom to concentrate on honing your report writing skills and techniques. This program will appeal to IIMS students and those surveyors making their way in the industry. We can only handle 12 delegates, so reserve your place to avoid disappointment. Visit our website for more information on our events throughout the year. And finally, IIMS Team Building Forest Adventure. If you are a regular reader and have been digesting these bulletins over the years, you may recall that once a year Team IIMS heads off for a couple of days team building in the heart of the New Forest at Minstead, in the UK. This year's highlight was to be a team paddle in one giant kayak from Poole Harbour to Brownsea Island. Sadly, the unseasonal British weather intervened as heavy rain and high winds forced a change of plan. We opted for the safer option of the public ferry to the island instead. But the team's spirits were not dampened. The first half of 2025 has been fast-paced and successful. It has kept the team busy and time has whistled by. The second half of the year promises more of the same. Survey well, Mike. Our first report is on the IIMS AGM, which took place online on the 3rd of June, broadcast live from the Institute's headquarters. A number of honours were announced at this year's AGM. Palma, Mallorca-based Tim Rowe has been awarded a fellowship for his work in the marine industry over many years. Honorary fellowship has been awarded to Captain Zilur Buyan, Bangladesh Regional Director, as he is set to retire from the surveying profession. Another retiree, Emiraku Ijeoma from Nigeria, who was instrumental in helping to establish our Nigerian branch, was recognized with an honorary membership. It is rare for IIMS to recognize the contributions of non-institute members, but the management board has decided to honor Stuart Edmonston, UKP and iClub Safety and Risk Management Director with an honorary fellowship. And last, but by no means least, IIMS was delighted to announce that Chairman of Standards, Paul Homer, an IIMS Executive Director, was to receive a Lifetime Achievement Award. Paul's experience spans more than four decades as a marine surveyor, and this recognition reflects his personal dedication, commitment and contribution to IIMS over many years. Mike was wholesome in his prize and thanks for his IIMS colleagues and all the other people around the world who give of their time. And now for our next story, Marine Battery Systems, Are Current Standards Enough? The report Maritime Electrification, Maritime Battery Systems and Onshore Power Supply, published by Bureau Veritas Marine and Offshore in May 2025, takes a critical look at the regulatory framework for shipboard energy storage systems and onshore power supply solutions. At a time when lithium-ion batteries are becoming central to the electrification of the world fleet, the document points to standards that are still fragmented, often optional, and insufficiently binding. This gap could compromise crew safety and slow down the adoption of these technologies. You can read the full report on marine battery safety, fragmented regulations, through our website at iims.org.uk/news. Next, inspection on board NCL Sultan reveals deficiencies. The Norwegian Maritime Authority has conducted a port state control inspection on board the ship NCL Sultan in Orkanger following the vessel's towing off Bindset, where it had been lying since the grounding incident. Throughout the entire salvage operation on the 27th of May, the Norwegian Maritime Authority had an action inspector on board to assist the Norwegian Coastal Administration, shipping company, class and salvage company. NCL Sultan sails under the Cypriot flag. After the ship docked in Orkanger, the Directorate's port state inspector went on board to carry out a port state control inspection. The inspection report shows the following findings, deficiencies. As a result of the grounding, the ship has suffered hull damage that makes it unseaworthy. The flag state of Cyprus must provide written confirmation that the ship can go to a repair shop for repairs. The conditions for sailing to a repair shop must be approved by the Norwegian Maritime Authority. The bridge navigational watch alarm system was switched off both before and during the grounding. It must be repaired before the ship can sail. The ship's ISM system was not in accordance with the requirements. This must be corrected within 3 months. The escape routes on the ship do not comply with the requirements. The hatch to the emergency exit from the engine room is too heavy and is difficult to open from the inside. Must be repaired within 14 days. The Norwegian Maritime Authority is awaiting further plans for the ship in dialogue with the shipping company and flag state. In our next segment, the Black Sea MOU has published its annual report for 2024, detailing its actions and presenting key port state control data. The 2024 reporting period was significantly impacted by the ongoing armed conflict between the Russian Federation and Ukraine, which continued to pose serious risks to the safety and security of crews and vessels operating in the region, conflicting with the Black Sea MOU's objectives. Throughout 2024, a total of 4,587 inspections were conducted on 3,304 individual ships in the Black Sea region, covering ships registered under 70 flag administrations. This represents a 13.4% decrease compared to the 5,294 inspections conducted in 2023. Notably, this marks the second lowest number of inspections since the establishment of the Black Sea MOU on PSC, with the only lower figure being 4,499 inspections in 2007. Furthermore, the number of individual ships inspected in 2024 was the lowest recorded to date. A key observation in 2024 was the significant increase in the average detention rate, which rose to 4.71%, reflecting a notable upward trend since 2021. This increase underscores the growing necessity for robust port state control mechanisms to ensure maritime safety and regulatory compliance in the region. You can download the report at bsmou.org. Up next, the U.S. Coast Guard has released a significant update to its underwater survey guidance for U.S. flagged vessels, marking the first major revision since its introduction in 1989. The revised guidance, released on May 30, 2025, introduces several key changes aimed at streamlining regulatory processes while maintaining safety standards. Most notably, the update explicitly authorizes the use of remotely operated vehicles for conducting underwater inspections. The new framework introduces age-based requirements, allowing vessels under 15 years old with proper class notation to conduct underwater surveys without additional Coast Guard approval. Vessels exceeding 15 years will undergo a streamlined review process. In a significant move to reduce administrative burden, the Coast Guard has eliminated duplicate dry dock date tracking. For classed vessels, these dates will now be managed solely by authorized classification societies rather than being tracked on the certificate of inspection. The update follows decades of evolution in underwater survey practices. Since its initial implementation in the 1980s, when the Coast Guard first authorized limited ship types to participate in underwater surveys, technological advancements and expanded vessel eligibility have necessitated these changes. Up next, the Panama Maritime Authority has implemented an additional safeguard called pre-check, a screening process that aims to ensure only compliant vessels join the Panama Ship Registry. The pre-check process involves a thorough risk assessment of various aspects related to the vessel, its owner, operator, and/or charterer before applying for the entry into the Panama Ship Registry to ensure that the vessel meets the international standards regarding safety, environmental protection, crew welfare, and to promote cooperation and best practices in the maritime industry. According to the authority, a key benefit of pre-check is its ability to prevent flag hopping, a practice where vessels jump from one registry to another to avoid compliance, evade sanctions, or engage in illicit activities. You can find out more in the news section of our website. For our next report, the German Federal Bureau of Maritime Casualty Investigation released its report into the collision with a pier, dry dock by the car carrier Endurance due to broken lines in Bremerhaven on the 13th of March 2021. This investigation was concluded with a summary report, as the accident involving the Endurance was mainly due to the worn lines and the replacement was not made in good time due to the lack of a suitable SMS with effect from the 1st of January 2024, new internationally binding guidelines for the inspection and maintenance of mooring equipment, including lines, came into force. In particular, the vessel operator is now required to introduce a procedure for mooring operations, as well as the inspection and maintenance of mooring equipment, including mooring lines. A maintenance procedure must be implemented on ships so that worn lines are identified in good time before they fail. Maintenance must be carried out and documented on board. Advice on the required visual inspections has been published with the guidelines. Accordingly, further safety recommendations to the vessel operator are not required. Regarding the port's involvement, voluntarily communicating with vessels, for example recommendations on safe mooring or offering alternative berths if necessary, this was of lesser importance in the Endurance case, as the master was aware of the weather forecast and had already taken appropriate action by requesting tug assistance in response. You can read the full report, including what happened, at bsu-bund.de. Up next, according to DNV's latest report, Maritime Safety Trends 2014-2024, preparing for future risks, the number of maritime safety incidents increased by 42% between 2018 and 2024, while during the same period the global fleet grew by just 10%. Driven mainly by an aging fleet and machine damage/failure, the findings highlight the risks connected with operating older ships, often more prone to faults, groundings, and fire-related incidents. The dataset, provided by Lloyd's List Intelligence, contained more than 2,200 recorded casualty incidents per year since 2021. Machinery damage/failure was responsible for the highest number of casualty incidents in all years, with this climbing to 60% of all cases in 2024, up from 38% a decade ago. The data shows a clear correlation between vessel age and operational reliability with incidents involving vessels more than 25 years old, accounting for 41% of all reported cases, up from 32% in 2014. Across all age groups, machinery damage/failure incidents grew by 20% in 2024. Among other findings, the report notes a rise in fire and explosion incidents, with a 42% increase in the past 4 years. You can download the report at www.dnv.com/maritime. Next, in a significant move to strengthen maritime safety across the UK, the Department for Transport has issued an updated version of the Port Marine Safety Code with clear expectations that marinas and other non-statutory marine facilities bring their safety practices in line with the national framework. While compliance with the code remains voluntary, it is regarded as industry best practice, and failure to follow it may be considered evidence of negligence in the event of a marine incident. The code is supported by the Guide to Good Practice on Port and Marine Operations, offering practical guidance to help marine facility operators implement effective safety and environmental management systems. You can find out more on our website. In our next segment, the International Marine Contractors Association has published its annual safety statistics report, showing that line of fire incidents remained the leading cause of lost time injuries among IMCAR marine contractor members in 2024, accounting for more than half of such injuries. The research, which IMCAR has published each year since 1996, found that the total lost time injury rate across its contributing members onshore and offshore operations remained unchanged at 0.3 incidents per million hours worked. This follows steady improvements since 2010, when the LTIR was more than twice as high as recorded in 2024. Meanwhile, the total recordable injuries rate rose slightly, a pattern seen across the energy industry, although IMCAR contractor members saw a small improvement in the total recordable injury rate recorded for offshore from 1.47 injuries per million hours worked in 2023 to 1.38 in 2024. Just over half of lost time injuries reported were line-of-fire-related injuries. Understanding the underlying causes of these accidents and how they can be reduced will be a priority for IMCAR, working with its members and partner organizations, in 2025. Slips and trips were the second main cause of LTIRs, accounting for 22% of the total in 2024. The fatal accident rate halved from 0.63 fatalities per 100 million hours worked in 2023, to 0.3 fatalities in 2024. For offshore workers, the rate fell from 0.41 in 2023 to 0.18 in 2024, the lowest fatality rate ever recorded by IMCAR contractor members. You can read the report www.imca-int.com. Next, the New Zealand Transport Accident Investigation Commission has warned against deferred ship maintenance after a ship lost control. Container ship Shealing lost control at Wellington Harbour in 2023. On the 15th of April 2023, the container ship Shealing was under pilotage outbound from the port of Wellington and had just initiated a turn into the Wellington Harbour entrance channel when it suffered a blackout that caused the main engine to stop. The momentum of the turn carried the ship into the shallow waters of Falcon Shoal, where the bridge team succeeded in using both the ship's anchors to stop the ship from grounding. The ship was subsequently towed dead ship by harbour tugs back to its berth to be repaired. On the 10th of May 2023, the repairs having been made, the Shealing departed Wellington bound for Singapore. Because of forecast inclement weather for the Tasman Sea, the master decided to take shelter near the New Zealand coast and wait for about 36 hours for the weather to abate. Because of the length of time spent at Wellington, the bilge water holding tanks and the engine room bilges were full, and water had begun to accumulate on the engine room tank top. When the Shealing entered the Tasman Sea, it began to roll, and the free water on the tank top entered the void under the main engine sump, where three rubber diaphragms were located. The diaphragms linked the main engine sump to the main engine lubricating oil tank beneath. Their purpose was twofold: to compensate for the relative movement between the main engine and the solid structure of the tank, and to prevent water entering the lube oil tank. However, all three rubber diaphragms were in a deteriorated state and allowed the bilge water to enter the lube oil tank, causing the lube oil pumps to lose pressure and the main engine to stop. Without the main engine operating, the Shealing was unable to maneuver. The ship settled with its beam to the swell and began to roll heavily. With no option for recovering the main engine, the master made a mayday call. A tow-capable vessel located in the nearby port of New Plymouth responded, initially taking the Shealing in tow to the sheltered waters of Golden Bay and eventually back to Wellington for further repairs. Why it happened? The ship's blackout in Wellington Harbour was caused by exhaust gases from a cracked cylinder liner in one of the generators entering the centralized cooling water system that supplied cooling water to all generators and the main engine. The running generators tripped out because of high cooling water temperature and caused the blackout, which subsequently caused the main engine to stop. Although the ship held valid statutory and classification society certificates, the generators and several other safety critical systems were found to be in a deteriorated condition. It is very likely that the rubber diaphragms had not been inspected for many years, despite the issuing of several bulletins by insurance clubs and engine manufacturers warning of the critical importance of maintaining the diaphragms in good condition. You can read the full report, including lessons learned, at www.iiamsnewzealand.co.nz. For our next report, global shipping giant Maersk has commenced the rollout of its new digital connectivity platform One Wireless aboard 450 of its vessels, according to Brooks Bell. The new platform has been created to meet growing demand for real-time cargo tracking and advanced IoT capabilities. The rollout of One Wireless has now begun and is expected to complete by the first quarter of 2026. Commenting, Maersk's head of vessel and cargo connectivity, Kjed Dittmann, said, "With our next-generation connectivity platform, we will be able to offer our customers notable benefits, including real-time cargo tracking, enhanced supply chain visibility, and improved operational efficiency. This platform is designed to support thousands of IoT devices, ensuring optimal performance for reefer tracking and fleet IoT." Up next, the International Cargo Handling Coordination Association has highlighted a crucial amendment to the International Maritime Dangerous Goods Code that improves the safety of ammonium nitrate transport by sea. This particular change affects Clause 7.6.2.8.4 and reinforces that carriage of UN 1942 ammonium nitrate and UN 2067 ammonium nitrate-based fertilizer under deck is only permitted if hatches, including tween deck hatches, are capable of being opened up in an emergency so that effective firefighting through maximum ventilation and boundary cooling can be undertaken. You can read the full press release at ichca.com/news. In our next segment, Transport Malta has issued a notice to inform all concerned parties about the Merchant Shipping Amendment Act 2025, outlining updated guidelines for the registration and seaworthiness requirements of Maltese ships. The Directorate has reviewed the guidelines for ascertaining the seaworthiness required in terms of Article 12 of the Merchant Shipping Act for vessels being registered as Maltese ships. As a rule, in terms of Article 3, 8, merchant ships of 20 years and over will not be registered, while applications for the registration of other ships will be considered subject to the ship being either in class or in the process of being classed with a recognized organization. The receipt of an up-to-date class survey status report or information on the validity of the current statutory certificates, including details of any pending recommendations, exemptions granted, acceptance of equivalents or otherwise, related to both class and statutory certificates. The receipt of an affirmation by the relative class that the ship is in a position to be issued with all the appropriate statutory certificates without recommendations. The receipt of appropriate information on the performance of the ISM managers that are to manage the ship. Furthermore, registration of merchant ships of 15 years and over is also subject to the outcome of a prior-to-registration inspection by an authorized flag state inspector. The Directorate may require the inspection to be carried out in dry dock. When the Directorate allows the inspection to be carried out on registration, only a non-operational provisional certificate of registry will be issued. Ships of 10 years and over but less than 15 years shall also be presented for inspection by an authorized flag state inspector within 1 month of registration. On payment of the relevant fees, owners may opt to have their ship inspected prior to registration. A negative outcome of an inspection of a registered ship may lead to the immediate closure of registry. It is emphasized that the final decision on the registration and seaworthiness of a vessel remains at the discretion of the Directorate. Up next, the U.S. National Transportation Safety Board released its Safer Seas Digest 2024, which details the most important lessons learned from maritime investigations completed last year. Safer Seas Digest 2024 details the facts and analyzes the probable causes of 34 maritime casualties, including capsizings, collisions, contacts, fires, floodings, groundings, and machinery damage. Among the events included in the report are the engine room fire aboard the passenger ferry Sandy Ground near Staten Island, New York, and the fire aboard the dinner cruise vessel Spirit of Boston in Boston. You can download the report at www.ntsb.governor. And for our final story, Survitech has called on ship owners, ship managers and shipyards to prepare for a significant change to international fire protection regulations for Ro-Ro and Ro-Pax ships. From 1 January 2026, fixed water monitors will be required on the weather decks of Ro-Ro and Ro-Pax ships under amendments to SOLAS Chapter 2-2 and the FSS Code, approved by the IMO's 107th MSC session. The decision follows an increasing number of serious fire incidents involving vehicle cargo, including several high-profile incidents involving electric vehicles, that have exposed the limitations of existing fire protection measures. That's all we have for this month. Thanks for listening.